On behalf of the chairperson, I want to apologize for him. Please remember that he has just been moved to public enterprise contracting. So there are a few bills that he has to wrap up so that the trustees committee. That's why she is not here and she has asked me to send him for him. And she has asked me to apologize to the delegation from Transport for not being here. He is then her aunt and for me, chair of the committee. And you are all welcome. And without further ado, I'll give over to the leader of the delegation of platforms to introduce themselves and then you can get you through the video. Hoping that you help yourself to see of the and our apologies for this.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. My name is Mugori, I'm the chairman of the Transport Board. And next to me on my left is my fellow colleague, Peter German, who is the chairman of the Transformation Committee on the Board. And then on my right is management, the CEO, Thomas Brent, who I'm sure you've seen many times in the Transport Committee. Who is Joe Stanley, the office here. The and then Leslie Mojumeni, who is going to be running most of the presentation today. Just maybe to put a few things into context, Madam Chair, we are a fairly new board. We've been on the board in the last 30 months. And we have been working quite hard in trying to meet the objectives of the shareholder. As you might be aware, at the time that we took over, which was around October of 2006, the direction that we were going was that Safcon would be playing a key role in the restructuring of the forestry sector. We are obviously going to be doing a much more limited role in that now, given the fact that end of this year, Cabinet took a decision for the privatization of KZ. So in implementing that particular decision, we have been working very hard with the Department of Public Enterprises to make sure that we implement the directives that we have received from the shareholders. And the presentation is obviously going to talk about that, and we will be happy to take any of the questions that we have. But I'll hand over to management.
I'm standing because I'm unhappy about the venue. These are our guests, they should be seated away by the committee. I've asked the control secretary and also the section manager to come here. It's absolutely clear that Parliament arranges venues like this one. And that is why I'm standing. No, please, I think I can get
the lady.
I'm fine.
The old thing is that if things were to go my way, I would cancel the project, truly speaking. But because I know that support has come all the way to come and make a presentation, and on that note, that is why I'm a tolerant of the situation, but in principle, I'm really upset with people, and we cannot take it out on that policy. We get the answer. That's why I'm trying to support myself, and I thank you for being open to me to come and speak. I'm not even sure if our minds are going to be really focus, but I also are going to be able to give that focus. All of that will just be given to you to so raise our questions, so far it is, you know, coming at the situation of the
thank you very much. In fact, I was even thinking of placing solidarity with the public teacher and stand up as well. My guest
is one.
Yeah. That is all right.
Then can I assure you for a shortcut walk through you? Though we don't like the whole privatization, we won't direct our anger at you.
Okay, you can sit down if you're comfortable.
Madam Chair, I'll stand so that I can see what can be properly.
Okay.
And thank you very much for the opportunity to address the committee. We'll try and make it informative presentation, so as we'll try and keep it fairly short. Just as an introduction, this is the 12-month report, so when you compare to the previous year that we reported to this committee, the previous year was 9 months. We had a change in year-end to comply with government rules that all the SOEs should have a 31st March year-end. If we look at the 2006-2007 year, it was most probably one of the most eventful years in not only the industry but also for the company. And the four items I'd like to highlight, in using an abbreviation, it will be double P, double F. The first one is on performance, and we will discuss that as we go along. It's the best performance that this company has ever. The second one is privatization, what the chair did refer to. We'll just touch on that. Then on the transformation side, the forestry charter has been developed and should be implemented early next year, and then the role of SAFCO in implementing transformation through the charter process. And then the last one is the fire, abnormal fires that we had towards the end of this year. So we're not only purely going to focus on the financial year end with the committee's permission, we'll look a little bit beyond that as well in terms of our fire experience and the transformation issues. What we have there on the slide is one key, which is an example, we plant plus minus 5 million trees a year in our operation, just to give you some indication of the extent of forestation. So we harvest and we plant approximately 5 million trees per annum. In terms of value creation, having a look back in the past 5 years, the company grew in net asset value almost 360%. So in 2002 we reported a net asset value of 488 million rand, and it's over 2 billion in this report. Just to start off on the corporate governance side, the chairperson did refer to the fact that the board was reconstituted during the course of the financial year that we are presenting to you today. Certain board committees were formed to make sure that we look after the corporate governance of the company. A new one for the organization was the transformation committee to focus on all the pillars except for ownership that's been prescribed by DTI, the finance investment, and added to it was the transaction committee subsequent to the announcement that the company will be privatized today, the remuneration committee and the audit and risk committee that this committee would be familiar with. On the board committees, the only thing to highlight, and it's also in the financial statements, is that we don't have a board member specifically with financial expertise. The one that was nominated to accept the position, so the board in the interim appointed an individual to assist us in terms of the audit committee chairing the audit committee. The turning point in the organization was on the 26th of March, when the minister announced that cabinet has decided to continue or proceed with the privatization of the company. During the first part of this year, we did do a strategic planning process whereby we had looked at strategies to grow and transform the company, and also the impact the company could have on the industry, the bigger industry in terms of transformation. So with the change in direction, the growth and transformation business plan was amended slightly to make sure that we achieve the objectives of government in terms of privatization. Okay, the guidelines. Just briefly, the guidelines for the transaction objectives. You don't have that. It's a late transparency that we added on the transaction objectives. Government gave us four objectives to look at. The first one is to transfer from alternate costs to the private sector in a way which increases the equitable competition in the forestry industry and the sawmilling industry. Thereby, government wanted to transfer all the risks and liabilities associated with the operations of the company with the assets to the private sector. They would also like to decrease the concentration of softwood sawlogs in the industry, whereby Somaliland is currently a dominant supplier. And finally, under objective one, they would like to increase, if at all possible, the investment. Objective two, to facilitate and encourage economic empowerment. There we would look at the valid land payments to benefit from the project, as well as surrounding communities, as well as the employees of the company. Objective three is fair value. That's in terms of the PFMA. We must make sure that we do get fair value, and when we don't get full value, we must be able to motivate deviations from that. And the last one is to achieve rapid and full conclusion of the transaction. And the instruction is that by 31st March 2009, the money must be in the bank and capital must be wound up as far as possible in terms of operations. It may not be possible to de-register the company at that stage, but there shouldn't be a failure with management or any employees in the company at that stage. Just a final point on this transparency is on the slide is that Somaliland will be sold as a going concern. Either in whatever transaction format we get like that. In terms of the operations of the board in the company, the main drivers of corporate governance is through the shareholders compact. The current shareholders compact is being designed based on the guidelines and the privatization, the new direction given by the shareholder. The KPIs will also be designed according to those guidelines, and the strategic objectives as said earlier has changed from growth to the privatization of the company and to maintaining the company in its current state. Then we also entered into a significance and materiality framework with the Department of Public Enterprises, which will give us guidelines in terms of the transactions that we as an organization are allowed without referring back to the department, and which ones we do have to refer back to the department for approval. And then finally, obviously, the various acts that we have to comply with, the National Forest Act, Companies Act, the Environmental Management Act, and then King II, and the only other act that's not listed there that is important for us is the Management of State Forest Act, in terms of which that goal was created. Just brief look at the highlights of the group's performance for the previous financial year. Profitability, pre-tax returns of equity, 41.6% compared to 15.3%. Again, just remember that the 15.3% is for a 9-month period. So you've got to increase that probably with another 10% to have some comparative figures. We sold the sustainable yield of our operations. The calculation was that we would have a yield of around about 1.6 million during the year, and we did sell 1.6 million cubic meters of logs, compared to the one from O1 for the 9 months period previous year. In terms of technology upgrade, there we did not implement the original plans because of the change in direction, and we're maintaining our technology, we're not upgrading the technology in our sawmill. Research and development is continuing, it's not something that we can interrupt. So we spend 1% of our results on our research and development, although the budget or the objective of the company is to spend around about 1.5% on that into the future, but that was due to rapid increases in soil loss prices that we didn't spend all of it. We did spend our budget amount. What the rest of the presentation would be is on the transformation cells, safety, health and environment. Leslie will do that for us. After that, Joe will go through the financial specific performance, as well as he'll give you some insight into the fires that we have. And then at the end, I will just conclude on the road ahead. Thank you.
Thank you. In terms of transformation, we at Subcon are committed to transformation imperatives. And also, we are, or we have been part of the development of the forestry charter, which is under the custodian of the Department of Water Affairs and Forestry. And on this deliverables, I will be touching on 7 elements of the DCI charter, with the exception of the ownership, as it's not applicable to state-owned enterprise. Not sure if that is clear enough, but if you look at the figures, if you look at the figures, if you look at that line going downwards, in terms of numbers, we are almost balanced in terms of representativity. I think the bigger challenge is almost on the top part, which I would like to project here. The bigger challenge as a result of many other things, including transformation, if you look at what was there in 2006 and 2007 on male and female, and only on the Malaysian part, we were at 10 males, now we are at 11, and the rest were being completely the same. On the female part, there's been an increase in the inner band, with 2 more there, and that's the same, and there's an increase of 2 people in the D band. If you look at more on the ethnic groups and representativity as well, on the management side, still a challenge as well. If you look at Africans here, we look at 15 plus. One is about 16 out of 60 there. In terms of skills development and training, we are operating a training center, as we've already mentioned in the past, called the Platoran, which is based in Nelspruit in Sabi. And in the previous financial year, we were able to train about 5,083 people, which is equaling 14,150 men day. We also are now, we have already initiated now the bridging classes that give assistance to students, more especially on the scarce skills, which similarly forestry and accidents and wood science and so forth. And we also have supported other classes with 203 learners in the previous year. In terms of budget allocation, we've got 1.7 million which was allocated to budget, of which 67.7% was allocated to black students, particularly from the adjacent communities from where we operate from. If you look at potential procurement and specifically on the contractors, most of our work or the bulk of our work is done by the contractors. The complement thereof is about 3,000 employees on the contractor side. And what we have done in the previous year, we have established partnerships with SEDA, Small Enterprise Development Agency. They were able last year to screen our supplier database, especially the contractors who are SMEs below 5 million turnover, to assist them with funding and purchase of certain equipment that are necessary. And also we have an extending memorandum of understanding with DBSA for the assistance of SMMEs, particularly towards the new enterprise development area. In terms of assistance further to SMMEs, we are also, we've also started assisting them with health and safety and training, and also technical site training on the contractor so that they can be well established and they can be productive as well. In numbers, we have supported about 37 SMMEs, of which about 7 of them were women-owned contractors. Enterprise development, we have again started in line with the activities and the GITA initiative. We have we've established a forest enterprise development unit, which handles and looks at what are the potential in terms of developing enterprises in the forestry-based industry. And we're doing that in support of the economic development in forestry as a whole. We have spent, until March 2007, we have spent $2.4 million in different projects. And that was done before that we had to do what we call social scan study, where we look at communities around us and check where we can establish projects and what kind of projects people will be keen to sort of be involved in and what needs are available in those communities. The focus thereof was mostly adjacent communities and communities with land claims. Socio-economic development, SAFCOL invests in social upliftment of both employees and the surrounding community with special focus on children. And the bulk of the money that we have spent this year was more on education and infrastructure related projects, where we were building mostly preschools and classrooms and halls for the communities around us. Ever since the establishment of this fund, 19.4 million has since been invested. When we look at health, safety and environment, we are proud to have retained our Forestry Stewardship Council certification that allows us to trade our logs as certified products internationally recognized. And we also concluded the sale of about 10,000 hectares of St. Lucia, which is going to now be part of St. Lucia Western Park Authority under DEAT. With that, we have also included about 5.8 million, which will be utilized for further rehabilitation of the land. And most of our operations are having 4-star northern grading, which is the safety grading. And like I said initially, on the contractor side, we are also assisting the contractors to actually achieve a better northern grading on the operation. In terms of HIV awareness, we have initiated an intensifier program, and we are conducting medical screening on employees. On tourism and safety, we are in partnership with the Mpumalanga provincial government. We have gone into partnership. They have given us a substantial amount of money, 1.2 million, I think it's 1.2 million, which we are going to we have established vendor stalls in areas where there's waterfalls and picnic areas and where there's attraction to the public. So we have already established those things. We're going to be commissioning them in a few months to come, and the vendors are now starting to run. Thank you.
Looking at the financial side, an important aspect that we focus on is to try and manage the risk in terms of internal controls and safeguarding of the assets. So we put in place several measures to raise the awareness in the group. There's a fraud prevention plan which has been adopted by the company and is included in the corporate plan. What we've also done to raise the level of awareness is to establish a code of ethics, part of the ethics of South Africa, the joint ethics South Africa. And we communicated this code of ethics within the group, and it forms part of our group policies and procedures. We've established a fraud hotline or a whistleblowing facility, which is operated independently through an external service provider, and people can report this hotline anonymously. We've done some planning and brochures to raise awareness among staff of these issues. And there's also, from our internal audit side, there's surprise checks and reviews. We have uncovered a few incidents, but I think the material is well below the radar screen in terms of the materiality framework that we apply within the company. And these incidents mostly relate to consumable stores and pest control. The information that led us to these cases were passed on to the internal audit through various sources, staff and management, in some cases external contractors and or customers. We have instituted disciplinary procedures against individuals responsible for perpetrating these incidents, and in some of the cases we've completed the disciplinary investigations, in other cases still ongoing. However, the main risk for us in forestry in our business is fires. We'll come back to that. Looking at the financial results and balance sheet for the year 2007, if you look at our balance sheet, it's a strong balance sheet, very healthy. We have got we've got liabilities. Most of that 603 million long-term liability is deferred tax that owes the government, 575 million. The interest-bearing portion is of our liabilities is less than 35 million. So the biggest asset that we've got is the standing timber or the plantations. We've recorded a good growth of over 800 million in the value of plantations, mostly due to increase in selling prices. Our vehicle equipment and equipment and other fixed assets have grown a little bit. Current assets, again, grown significantly, mostly in terms of stock and debtors, because of the increased selling prices of the lots, which is close to the debtors as well as to the stock holding in terms of raw material. On the long-term liabilities, we've had a look at that. Current liabilities, a small growth there. And then in the capital and reserves, about 800 million increase. And we've improved the balance sheet value from 1.7 billion rand to 2.8 billion rand in the 12-month period. Looking at the income statement or the value creation that we've done in the year, again, please remember 2006, a 9-month period, and 2007, which is a 12-month period. I think we're in the unique position and maybe one of the first companies in South Africa where our bottom line is more than our turnover. And but we'll go through and then we'll see where it comes from. Turnover 685 million rand for the year under review. And we used direct cost of 531 to generate that turnover, leaving us with an operating profit of 154 million for the year. It's not really feasible to compare with the prior year because of the 9-month period, so let's ignore that for the time being. Investment income, it's mostly interest that we generate on the cash resources that we carry in the balance sheet. And also some income from the associate companies. Remember we privatized four entities previously, and these entities earn income and we share 25% of that income that's reflected also under investment income. We also didn't pay dividend to government for 2006-07 because we were waiting for the cash implications of the transaction, and therefore there was improvement in the cash availability. So if we just look at purely at operations, we generated 244 million rand compared to the 72 in the 9-month period. But then the plantation valuation adjustment came through in terms of the financial reporting standards. We valued the plantations on a discounted cash flow basis looking forward for 50 years, and that improved by 862 million, mainly as a result of improved selling prices, leaving us with 1.1 billion rand that we generated in terms of value. What did we do with that? In terms of taxes, mostly deferred tax, we had to put that aside to government that we will pay in future sometime. We didn't pay dividend to government, and we paid about 2 million rands worth of interest to the bank and financial institutions. So we kept back 801 million of the 1.1 billion rand, and that compares reasonably well with the plantation valuation adjustment, which is a non-cash flow item. non-cash flow items, there's no use in declaring a dividend for that, because people will have to go to the bank and borrow money to pay dividends. So, looking at financial performance, I think last year the committee asked us to look at some benchmarks when we come here. With an asset base of 2.8 billion, we had a look at to see what are the expected annual returns that we should generate for our shareholders. The norm that we use in our corporate planning is to generate a real 6% return on forestry investments, 8% on sawmills, and then close to the cash, the market link rate for cash investments, and that if you work that out and average it out weighted for the balance sheet, we come to 7.83% return that we should be generating for the shareholder. And based on 2.8 billion, it gives you 220 million rand per annum. Our budgeted profit for 2008 is 234 million, which is a little bit higher than the 220 million that we should be generating, but we must remember that we still got those privatized entities for which we get some income, not from our prices, but it's a passive income that we did get. The impact of the fires, before we go and have a look at the fires, we estimate that it will cost us 205 to 223 million rand in additional operating expenditure to work away the impact of the fires. But added to that, remember plantations, the 1.9 billion rand is our biggest asset. The fires wiped out about 300 million rand worth of carrying value in our balance sheet. So the total impact on our balance sheet based on these estimates is about 500 million rand of value that's been destroyed in the fires. Let's have a look at the fires themselves. It was very devastating. It was the worst fires in the history of Mpumalanga forestry. It started on a Friday evening, 27 July, and it lasted for 8-9 days until the 5th of August 2007. If you look at that, the tree, which is about 20 meters, 25 meters in height, and if you look at the smoke columns, it's between 250 to 300 meters high. High winds, on the evening the wind started blowing at a speed of 80 to 120 kilometers per hour, and you can see the damage that the wind did to the standing timber. It just snapped off the trees. If you look at fires, that's typical of a ground fire. It just creeps along the ground under the trees. It doesn't really damage the trees because it's on the old needles and combustible material that's on the ground. So that's not a very dangerous fire. This is a dangerous fire for plantation forestry. You can see the vortex is created by the fire. There's a ground fire there, but it goes up into the crowns. And a tree, the growth point is in the crown of the tree. So once it turns the crown, the tree will die. And it can do nothing. You can see these are small trees. That's it. Very small tree, probably less than 8 years old. One of our plantations, the Spitzka plantation just outside of the town of Savi, it's a 3,500 hectare plantation. The fire went through the plantation in approximately 1 hour. And we've only got 17.3 hectares of undamaged timber on the Spitzka plantation after the fire. So it was really terrible. Just a view from the air from one of the corporate planes. This is the Tweefontein plantation. It doesn't look too bad from the air, but if you carry on and you stand on the ground waiting for the fire to come towards you to try and control it in some other way, it really gets very, very scary. How do you stop a fire? Fire of this size or fire of any size must be out of control. You can't really stop it by human means. You have to have lots of teamwork, and then the climatic conditions must change. It must improve, it must get cooler, it must get wetter, otherwise you can't stop the fire. What we did do in terms of available resources, water bombers from the Firefighting Association, they come in and spray the air at the time and cool down with the situation, and then you get the snipers that come in with the landing bucket picking up the water and then dropping it more accurately on hot spots, and we're very grateful for the help from the National Defense Force. In the end, the biggest effort comes from the ground crews, and that's also the most dangerous work. Very dusty, dry, it's windy, it's hot, there's a lot of smoke around, it's not easy working on the fire line. But there's a water tanker and there's some puppies with puppies on there, and the crews are spraying and trying to keep the fire out of the neck of the fire. This is the mopping up crew after the fires, just going through the plantation, looking at hot spots, filling it with water. The water tankers, we recall them at certain strategic points within the plantation to put water refilling point. We recall the tankers with water and we add fire retardant chemicals to the water, so that helps with filling the fires. The water tankers have to be recalled, but also the people, so we had people from the regional admin staff assisting with food parcels. We had approximately 500 to 1,000 people working on fighting the fires from the Saffron side alone, that's excluding any of our neighbors or any working on fire people. And in fact, 500 to 1,000 food parcels every day for 8 days to get the people and get them going. There's some stories from the firefighting there. The fire started the Friday evening. One of our foresters was riding, looking at the fire, and he got a man running next to the road, and he asked him where he's going. He said, no, he's a driver on one of the plantations, and he heard, it was pay weekend, they all go home, and he heard that there's a fire, and he knows when there's a fire, they need drivers. So he came back from home, running to get to the plantation to start helping. There were some people that just dropped up there with their buckets and buckets helping out, saying, where can I go, where can I help put out the fire? It was really interesting. The shops kept open their doors after hours to provide us with food to put in the parcel. It was really tremendous. Looking at damage to the timber, this is the back one. So you can see the wind direction here, and the wind actually killed the tree while it was blowing in the one direction, so it's like they're frozen in a certain direction. These photos were taken a little bit after the fire, so you'll see that the needles have already started dropping. These trees are dead. Small trees, less than 8 years old, there's nothing you can do with it. You have to just tell them, leave them lying there on the ground and then start replanting. These trees you can see, it's a different species as well. Some of the others were patula, thin bark, that is susceptible to fire damage. These are Eleotheae. They've got a thick bark, and they fortunately didn't get ground fire, so these will probably recover. Infrastructure, due to the high wind, some electricity lines were blown over, some communication lines also, so it all created havoc during the fire. This is a 3.5 million rand piece of equipment that we used to fell the trees with. Normally in a fire, if they won't get damaged in a clear felt compartment like this, but with the high wind, the fire went into the clear felt compartment, 250,000 rand damage to the machine. But we were lucky, some of the contractors, Alpine Logging, some of the machines were totally destroyed. Where did the fire take place? Some of your people might know the area. Kraskop, town of Kraskop, Corbin's Rest, Sabu. The green are our plantations, later three plantations, Daphne, Fitzkop, the other part of Daphne, Red Parker, Red Cliff, and Fruitland. There was a fire that started in the Kraskop area and it damaged both three plantations and later plantations. Another fire started in Sabisu area. It went around to Spitskop, into Berkeley, through Berkeley, into the Red Water portion, and the little portion of Vitlip. And then there was a fire coming from this side as well, into the Vitlip plantation from our neighbors, and it burned up into the Vitlip area. There's a Spitskop plantation, 3,500 hectares, that got 17 hectares that they can work with.
In the whole of SAFCOL, we have our project, we have 124,000 hectares planted. Five damaged areas, 17,200. That's 14% of the planted area. Just to give you an idea, we try and clear about 1/50 every year, so that's about 3.3%. So that's close to four and a half, five times our annual harvest that got damaged in the past. If you look at the district, the Sabi district, about 50% of the district got fire damage, and if you look at the Spitzel plantation, 99% fire damage. The volume that is impacted by the fires, Madam Chair, is a huge volume. We estimate there's about 1.8 million cubes of timber in the fire damaged area. We will not be able to harvest and sell the less than 8-year-olds because there's no market for it. It's small. 9 to 16, we estimate that we will be able to salvage some, and then it improves, the salvage improves as we go along as the timber gets older. However, there's still some loss. We estimate about 30% loss of volume when we order to sell those. How do we manage such a huge volume of timber? One way of doing it is to stop all the other green felling of timber throughout the whole area and concentrate all our harvesting capacity on one area, and then put the timber into so-called wet decks, or logs under irrigation. This is what it looks like. You stack the logs up and you put a water pipe across it and you irrigate into it wet so that the fungi can't get into the logs. A wet deck, normal design for people that are maybe interested. You try and put it near to a water source because you need the water to go over the timber, and then it goes back to this certain catch or traps to trap the sediment before it goes back into the water. And you can keep logs under that for a reasonably long time. In the Eastern Cape and the Longmore plantation, they are still felling timber after 16 months after the fire, but you can really see the timber is getting deteriorating fast now. It's actually rotten. So we think we have 6 months to do it. Climatic conditions are a little bit different in Mpumalanga. And these are the challenges that we have to work with. Time constraints, we think we've got 6 months. Capacity constraints, we have to focus harvesting capacity, we have to focus transport and human resources on this specific project. And we haven't got enough trained people, but we are putting to come to, I think, 16 chainsaw operators per 2 week period through the Tafuran training center to help us up capacity there. And we're not the only forest owner that's trying to get his harvesting capacity on our side. Objectives with the project: want to salvage as much usable timber as possible, then we want to replant all the burnt areas before the surface start in 2010, and to return our plantations to normal rotation as soon as possible for the benefit of the industry. Marketing objectives: we want to meet all our current commitments, we don't want anybody else to have timber. We want to use, salvage timber to meet these commitments and don't go into the green timber. And then we will have to implement a proportional reduction of the volume commitments if we keep on the sustainability. The financial impact is about 500 million. We want to try and minimize that. Then there are some opportunities for SMMP development. The only problem is that it may be of a shorter nature, so we will have to carefully look at how we deal with that. And then we also will participate in any industry to deal with the current disaster and must try and prevent something like this happening again. If we look at the longer term, forestry is a long-term business. The actual impact of the fires will only be felt in the longer term. The solar supply position, which currently in South Africa is in a, there's a huge demand and the supply lags very much. There's a huge gap between supply and demand. This will increase, the gap will increase definitely. Our estimates currently is that the availability of pine saw logs will probably reduce by about 200,000 cubic meters per annum for the next 10 to 15 years before we can try and get it back to normality.
timber processing capacity, there's currently some over capacity in the sawmilling market, the sawmilling industry. If you take out another 200,000 trees, it will just increase the possibility of sawmillers struggling to remain in business. And unfortunately, that will have a serious impact on sustainable jobs in the industry. So, Madam Chair, fires is something that is very devastating for the forest industry.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Just to wrap up, on the challenges going forward, post-fires that we have covered quite well, and the future demand of supply of saw logs, the issues that we see with regard to that. The second one, very closely linked to it, is the marketing policy of the organization. We've been mandated by the board as management to have a relook at the marketing policy and design a policy that will ensure access of especially SME and HDI companies into this softwood saw log industry. Privatization, winding up of Sasol with the litigation that's pending is one of the things that we need to concentrate on to make sure that it doesn't delay the implementation. We have a very tight time frame. All the previous privatization processes took close to 3 years to complete. The instruction to this board is to have it completed by 31st March 2009. And linked to that is the whole land restitution process, whereby we must ensure that the communities and the rightful landowners do benefit from the process. So the board has been given a very difficult task to complete. On top of that, we have a very small time frame where we can really influence transformation into the industry, and we need to implement the forestry charter as far as possible by the time of privatization. Just to conclude, the vision of the company, to give some comfort to the committee that we will be self-funding going forward. We will not require any additional funds from government. So we are profitable, although the profitability for the current year and year to come may be or will be materially affected by the fires, but we will still be profitable and we will still be cash generators. There will be cash generators sufficient for our operations and for the recovery plan. The loyalty of our employees are beyond doubt. Joe also referred to that in terms of our experience with the firefighting. We have a very loyal and dedicated employee group. And in terms of innovation and technical excellence, we believe we are one of the leaders in the softwood forestry industry in South Africa, looking at new innovative ideas. So thank you for the opportunity to present to the committee.
We talked about the over the community. I hope there's nothing more for the rest of the family. Alright. Alright, I'll take your money very much.
Thank you very much. Actually, I must say, you know, the presenter, the jet through this presentation, was some information that was not in right from the beginning that we just got from the screen. And they've got a healthy balance sheet. It's fine. I've got a couple of questions to the chairperson. I ask all the questions and then we're allowed to sit them out because there's really a lot of questions that came up.
I think three.
Chairperson, the first one is on page 2 of the presentation. Why not change the technology? Just said we maintain with the existing technology, but no elaboration with it. The second question is on page 5. You know, KLS supports more than 37 SMEs. But what does it mean? What's it all about? In line with these initiatives, 11 was provided. For what? Where? When? 2.1 million was spent on different projects. What projects? You know, we need more elaboration. It is just headings and we, actually I'm feeling I don't know more than I actually knew when I came in there. The third question check is, if you go through this report itself, on page, since this report, the pages are not numbered, 45, from the original report that we are discussing today, and might I just mention that I think the whole thing about the fires is actually for next financial year, because that's what happens after this financial year. So we must not waste time on the fires. We will deal with that this year. But we spend a lot of time on that. On page 45, what concerns me there, if we look at the board of directors, if you look there, only 3 attended. Out of the 15, only 3 attended the 5 scheduled meetings. Of the board, and only 5 attend no committee meetings at all, nothing at all. One person, for instance, attended only 1 board meeting, but no committee meeting. But if you look at the other page, he's been paid 45,000 for attending 1 meeting. If I do understand it correct here. That is now on page 46. And if you look at the attendance of the committee, it's very, very poor here. And going along with that, one of the executive directors received a bonus of almost 1 million, 850,000, another one 560,000, and another one 334,000. For what were those bonuses being paid out? We haven't got any comments and things of that as well. And those members who received those huge bonuses, it seems as if they also attended only the board meetings and only 1 attended the committee meetings. This is worrying. Page 45 and 46 of this presentation is really worrying. Taking into account the latest concerns about directors and they, you know, serving on different directorships and even attending their own thank you, sir.
Maybe South Court came at the wrong time. I want to remember that members are still waiting for the next report. They are all changing and benefits and so on. I understand. That might be a problem. But on the serious note, my first question, Chair, would be an overview question. Exactly what is it which will be remaining after saving KSI? Do we still need SACCOR after? What will be the role of SACCOR after doing that? I think for me that would be cut cross impression. So that as one engages, understanding that we are engaging on what? And because we might be chasing a lizard once we want to chase a crocodile. So I learned this So, but I think for me that would be my first question, then nobody can ask questions after answering the question, where I'm going.
Okay,
On slide 3 of the corporate governance, it says KLF is sort of a growing concern, and SAFCOL to be winded up. But under the vision, you talk about all these wonderful things that must happen with SAFCOL now. Are you winding up or are you not winding up? Or is it a 3-month vision?
I have two hands, so I want to make this statement. It's fine. What was?
Thank you, Nancy. My question is not related to the report. What I want to know is, you know, on several properties, how many villages have you got? With people, you know, living in the village. And linked to that question, on page 36, where you say SAFCOL accepted delegated authority from Minister of Water Affairs to manage the facility. Okay. And then the paragraph further on says to say this delegation committee is at the 7th of March. Now what I want to know is, I mean, the land belongs to 12. You, the street belongs to several. The villages. Who's in charge? Who's supposed to provide services to those villages? Like water, maintaining the roadways in the villages. Who's in charge of that? Or is it the local authority? It can't be the local authority because it's private property. And are there any areas where SAFCOL is not providing services as the local authority? Can I go on?
Thank you very much, Jefferson. My answer will be on the state of the employees there. In that, as you plan your existing strategy, what are your plans with regards to those 1,800 employees? That's one for now. Thank you.
Madam Chair, let's talk about the bigger picture first, and then the detailed questions the management will take care of it. In terms of the direction we received from our shareholder, our job is to privatize KLS, in other words, sell that completely. And secondly, our brief is to shut down the company itself. Now, the CEO made the point that that might not probably be feasible, technically speaking, by the deadline that we have, which is the 31st of March 2009. But essentially, we are shut in shop. That's really what we're doing, completely. So that is really the directive that we have. Okay, let me maybe just also talk to that. I think there are some areas in which we need to keep or maintain our infrastructure at a certain level. And we've had to speak to GPE about those because the minister himself has not comfortable that we put more investment in the future. So one of the reasons why we have taken our time to review the corporate strategy that we submit to GPE is because we had to revise down the expenditure that we were going to spend on the operations of the entity. So all that we are really spending right now is what is required to maintain the infrastructure at a standard that is acceptable in terms of legislation, various legislation that is applicable. So we are not, for instance, I mean, one of the things that we had put in the original corporate strategy was an African expansion strategy. I mean, obviously that has folded completely because obviously it would be contrary to what our shareholder has said. The shareholder has also been concerned about major capital investments, which again we have completely folded or reduced quite substantially. So there are no plans for major expansion whatsoever. All we're doing is trying to maintain the infrastructure at a level that is acceptable for us to be selling the entity going forward.
Maybe, you know, I'm still grappling in my mind about that in reference to the presentation. For me, SAFCOL is ongoing. But I don't, it's not your responsibility to answer me as to why they're shutting down. That's not your responsibility. That's a political debate. So let me not focus. Let me give you the opportunity to respond to the rest of the question.
Thanks, Nancy. As the chairperson explained, perhaps the one thing that we didn't include in the presentation is that Kumasiland is the operating unit within SAFCOL. So that's the unit that we'll be looking at to privatize specifically. SAFCOL will then be left with cash resources and some other smaller assets, very minor assets, that we will be disposing of, and that's where the winding up will take place at the SAFCOL level. So at operational level, the business is a 30-year rotation business, and that needs to continue. And there we need, as our chairperson explained, to keep the investment going to make sure that we maintain the operation at the level that's acceptable for the business venture as it is. The second question was on the HMME and the 37 HMMEs, so I'd like Leslie to handle that. And the third one was on the remuneration, which I'd like Joe to handle that, and then we'll go through the rest.
The information on the request for further information in the SMMEs, we have supplied a document specifically for the portfolio committee, and that information is a fairly detailed amount of information, but when we click on the slide, we try to streamline it because you can imagine 37 MSMEs and everything, it will be many slides, and it's difficult for us to fly everything on the day. And some of the information which is not on the document here, it will be on the financial year-end financial report. Some of it will be on the slide. If it's not there, any other further information or detailed information is required for the committee, we can as well send it to the committee. But with all fairness, some of the information we felt, if we slide all and all the details on the presentation, it will be fairly big. But if there's any specific or particular information which is not in the two documents provided and on the slide and is required, we will be able to provide it to the committee through the chair.
Thank you. Okay, can you say that I think the last few slides, I think the last 10 slides or so are not included in
that's
the idea this way. So why don't you show them there?
Yeah, it's a statistic on the fire side, and as the other member of the committee was not feeling that is an appropriate thing, we were advised by the shareholder that it's important to also bring them up what has happened, because some of the members are not familiar with what is happening in terms of the fire in Mpumalanga, and we felt that we just slot in information on the fire to bring the members of what is happening on the fire. That was an add-on on the presentation to just put on the fire, although it did not happen in the previous financial year. You need that information. Must be referred to. It's available.
Chairperson, if we look at the board of directors, the board attendance, and the remuneration, I think we, in the annual report, the pages referred to is page 44, which is the first page we're going to start. There's a table there that gives you a list of the directors that were in office at the date of the report. And the table's got a column on the right-hand side which indicates which committees these board members belong to. So all the members don't serve on all the committees. That's very important to understand that. Secondly, some of the board members were appointed during the year, so they wouldn't have been able to attend any of the board meetings or committee meetings held before their appointment. If you then move across to the next page 45, The first table there in the middle gives a description of the meetings and the number of meetings. So the scheduled board meetings, there were 5 scheduled board meetings in the year. And then if you look at our chairperson, Ms. Molloy, she attended 2 of the 5 board meetings, but remember she was only appointed, if you look at the appointments, in September. So for the 6-month period, there were 2, probably there were 2, because about half of the 5 board meetings, so she attended both of them. So the ad hoc board meetings, there were 1 on the table describing the meetings, she attended the ad hoc board meetings. So in terms of maybe the table should rather reflect something like how, what the percentage of attendance of the meetings of that the member should have been attending rather than the number, because I agree it might be confusing because of these issues. Then if you look at the executive directors, they are not members of any of the committees in terms of good corporate governance. The committees are led by the non-executive and staffed by the non-executive directors. We will never find them as attending the committee meetings. And then going over to page 46 on the remuneration, the 850,000, that line actually is a summary of the 2 executive directors. There's no one member that received that that bonus, I wish I would have. And then if you look at the 2 executive directors, they have contracts of employment with them and there are performance measures in and performance incentives within those contracts of employment, and these bonuses were paid out in front of those agreements, and also in line BPE is giving guidance to SMEs on the remuneration of executive and non-executive directors and that includes in the performance incentives.
Sorry, I just wanted to make one other point through you, Madam Chair, in relation to the attendance of board members. We did have in the new board a member of the board that was not attending meetings, and we asked her to step down for the particular reason. So I think we are trying as the current board to make sure that if people are not able to make meetings, A, they're not paid, and B, if they meet 2 meetings, they are requested to step down. Obviously in consultation with the shareholders.
Madam Chair, then there is...
Just a follow-up on this. On
the board?
Yeah.
Okay.
Chairperson, yes. The specific person, this Cosmo Gadu, the 45,000, is that the person you're talking about, or the one who received 45,000 for attending no meetings?
The person, CIS Morgado, attended 1 scheduled board meeting.
Yeah, for 1 meeting.
Yeah.
You said he received 45,000 there.
The board of directors' remuneration for non-executives are not per meeting. It's an annual amount in terms of the guidelines. And therefore, he was in office for about 6 months. I think the annual amount is just under 100,000 for a year, and he was in office for about 6 months. He attended 1 meeting and he's actually got ill, he's got cancer, and he passed away in February 2007. So I think he was in hospital in Portugal.
Mm.
The Jefferson, that goes along with it. You remember with the presentation from the NEL, we heard from the CEO when we asked also concerning his bonuses, he announced certain new implementations that he brought into the NEL to fix it.
Mm.
On this the bonuses of the 2 executive directors, we haven't got any. Can we get a report or just an elaboration on what were their bonuses based on? Because Mr. Liebenberg told us exactly what he did and what he brought into the NEL, and it was prescribed that for that, you know, although they still make a loss, they improve. There was an improvement. We haven't got it. Is it just part of their job description that they received those bonuses, or did they actually establish something positive that increased your profitability? Can you just elaborate on that? What were those bonuses based on? Because you said in the beginning you didn't bring in any new technology. That's what worries me. You said in the beginning the whole task force stays with the old technology. Thank you, Chair.
On the same thing, I think that we've asked this previously also with board attendance, to lift them out of. You know, you're tempted 2 out of 2 or 2 out of 5.
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes very clear, you don't have to cross reference and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the same goes for with regard to bonuses. So, you know, we see one figure, the company lost money or the company grew slightly.
Mm-hmm.
But as was explained this week, there are different targets set up.
Mm-hmm.
So if it said, no, out of these 5 issues, these are the targets, and because this and this was met, that
mm-hmm.
is why. So that we get the information that we need.
Mm. Maybe to just answer the question around how the executives are paid. I think at the beginning of each year, what ought to happen is that the remuneration committee and sometimes the chairperson of the board sit and discuss the key performance indicators of the CEO. And usually those key performance indicators are quite, they're quite difficult to achieve. And if those key performance indicators are achieved, obviously then the CEO would be given a bonus. However, under normal circumstances, to do what he normally does, obviously he gets the salary, as does all the employees. But for stretch targets, he would obviously be given a particular bonus in relation to that. But that is agreed beforehand with the chairperson of the board, with the chairperson of the remuneration committee, and the members of the committee. I think what the committee needs to realize is that a lot of what the previous board did, we obviously can't really take responsibility for that because we only came in a bit late. But we are revising some of those key performance indicators. But obviously, going forward, those are going to be specific to the mandate that this particular board has been given. And our mandate is to shut down the company and to sell KLS. That's basically going to be the key ones going forward.
They still
Thank you, Stephen. So there's still the question on the villages.
And the employees, the 1,800.
Yes, I'd like to.
Those were shut down.
Those are the two. Perhaps I could link that also back to the question about the going concern and the 3-month vision. As I explained, it's Kumatilan as operation will continue to operate in whatever format the board will present to the minister and what our shareholder will then apply going forward. And the majority of employees, we believe, will have continuous employment within the operations. So we do not see any major retrenchments taking place. Could be that there's some, especially at higher management level, but operational wise, you're not overstaffed, and any organization that will buy Kumatilan or part of Kumatilan will require those employees to continue the operations.
But they are not obliged.
They will be, because we're selling as a going concern from higher management level. They will be obliged to take it over.
You keep them for 3 months, then you can do whatever.
There is something that the board will have to consider in terms of the previous transactions. There were a 3-year moratorium on retrenchments placed on the employees. So it's something that in the transaction design going forward, the so-called board will apply their minds to see how they can ensure that there's no quick retrenchment or upfront retrenchment.
But just for Usha's sake, what are their chances in terms of being the new owner? Is that also looked at as an option?
Yes. In terms of the guidelines, employees, communities, land claimants need to benefit from the
transaction
and the board is considering that.
We'll expect a report on this one, because normally the private relation program is delayed by these issues if they are not addressed properly. So that's why I would like us to have a process of going.
The outstanding question was on the villages. Could I ask Leslie to respond to that? The number of the villages that we have on our property, the delegation from Grab, as well as the services provided to those.
Yes.
inherited in the second plantation that we received from Guam. Plantations which have got forest villages within them. And what led us to remember Red Hill, Remo, and one in Limpopo. So those areas were inherited when we got the same sort of the management of the assets from Guam. These from Guam. And out of those villages, what happens is some of them will have a valid land claim, some of them will not have a land claim, and the land claim process not yet finalized. As they say, in those villages, most of the services provided is from us, whatever we can in terms of assistance and whatever we can do for them. But because they do not have title deed for the land, it makes it fairly difficult for them to really get use of proper development in the areas in the villages that they are. And it also on the document which we have from between Dwarf and Land Affairs, the resolution thereof of those villages in terms of both faculties and ownership lies fairly between Dwarf and Department of Land Affairs. I think Comrade Cotwell will note that there was one of his constituencies that we attended a meeting between the separate communities in one of the villages within the forest of them without a title deed, which we as an organization tried within our limits to assist them with any basic needs that we can.
On page, I see that on page 8, 7 and 8, you speak of fraud and risk management. And when I read page 8, I see that you like downplaying the fraud incidents that are taking place in the electoral system. I would imagine that it is because maybe they lost a lot of financial muscle that is linked to those fraud incidents. But my concern would be the number of occurrences that will take place irrespective of the monetary value that might be attached to it, especially when you have a fraud prevention plan and yet you continue to experience this fraud incident. Can you give me a sense of that? Yeah. And then I'll give you, let me take the other two things, then I'll give you.
Madam Chair, these are my four questions.
I said three questions. Now you have your two.
No, let's not take it back. That wasn't my question. Chair, listen. Yes, I think part of what you just said earlier, sir. You say there on slide 11 and 12, you talk about all these wonderful things you're doing to assist the community. Slide 11 and 12, not slide 11 and 12. The project you've done, the focus on adjacent communities, trying to ascertain their needs and so on, these are all wonderful things. In your selling off, in your privatization, you make this part of your condition of sale. That whoever takes over from you will continue the social responsibility work that you are doing. And if not, why not? My next question, ma'am, is with regard to firefighting. Now, we've seen this kind of devastation caused by the firefighting. What has been your budget for firefighting over the last 5 years? What has been the impact of privatization or wanting to privatize on your approach to firefighting? Has it had an impact on your budget? Because I get the impression that somewhere it's okay if the place gets run down, you're not going to put money into the kind of equipment you need because you're going to sell off, so why make long-term investments? It doesn't look like the right kind of thing we should be doing. And then, if there was a change of heart, And the chair, the third question. Yes, one, two, three. The third question is, I mean, if there was a change of heart by the shareholder or by those who mandate the shareholder, especially with certain conferences coming up soon and so on, could Safco be run profitably and efficiently if we decided to make, keep it and not sell it off?
Yes.
And my first question.
Yes, sir. My question is with regards to the pattern that is being offered to the students, whereby we have got 57.7 who are black students. Because they are coming from the education community. But what is not specific, not clear here, whether this factory is a targeted factory, not in terms of what the race, but in terms of the area where the students are supposed to go, either in science or in commerce, or in just a general offer to any students.
What I'll do now, after two more things, I'll give them the opportunity to answer the questions that have been raised, and then I'll give the over to you.
Alright,
okay. Let's start from the back area to the full side on the nursery side.
You can start from the
From the nursery side, what you do annually, we determine exactly the requirements in terms of each of the sections or focuses within the business, the number of students who would like to sponsor in terms of nursery. So there's a need analysis done, and then we allocate the budget to those needs and we disperse them. So it's not that we have a pool of bursaries and anybody can apply for any direction of study. We keep very specifically focused on our business and the requirements going forward.
Just adding that on the document provided to the committee of the Office of Two, and this other document, the special document, you will see the type of trade or that we train to us. It's engineering, it's all kinds of things listed there as well.
Share then on the SAPCO profitability going forward. We've seen cash positive since the company was incorporated in 1993, and the expectation is that that will continue. So yes, we are a profitable organization. Firefighting, the budget I don't have at hand, but what I can say is that around about 4 years ago, we couldn't get external insurance for Stanley Prof for our trees, and the board at that stage resolved that the premium that would have gone for the external insurance will be applied for increased firefighting capabilities, and that we've diligently done. We did put a moratorium on fire on all equipment, replacing equipment and including new equipment for a number of years, but the new board did approve the acquisition of a lot of new firefighting equipment as we get trucks, and that was already bought before this fire. Perhaps just for the committee's information, this was an absolute abnormal circumstance. There was no way we could have had all the firefighting capabilities that the state of California had, and we wouldn't have been able to. But we wouldn't have been able to retain this fire. It happened late in the afternoon, under wind conditions that we couldn't even put people in the field. We firefighters, we take out the community, all our firefighters out of the field for safety reasons. They call it a firestorm, whereby there's no way to which you can contain it. Change of weather was any way that it could be contained. on the chair's outside for the social investment. It's something that the board will have to consider in the transaction design and the documentation, but the transformation charter, the property charter, does direct companies to spend a certain amount of the turnover on corporate social investment going forward. And then on the floor side, I'd like to show
you. Madam Chair, I think we try and design internal control and systems to try and prevent fraud as far as we can. But unfortunately, we have people, we have money, we always have some incidents. The incidents that we highlighted are, there are three incidents that we pick up. One is a purely person that took some cash that came to the conversion office. It was 5,000 rand and the person was dismissed after the investigation. Another person used some company fund to service the vehicle of a family member.
It's
3,500 rand. The investigation is undergoing the disciplinary hearing since last week, and we haven't heard what the outcome is, but it's a process. The biggest one, and that's the easiest one probably to steal, is fuel for chainsaw spares. So there's a market for chainsaw spares. The one that we picked up at one of the plantations is where we couldn't reconcile fuel usage and fuel balances, and that's about, over the time that we've traced back, about 155,000 rand worth of fuel that went missing. It's not what we could pick up, but probably the storemen and some of the drivers that work together to try and get fuel out because they didn't sell the fuel for some money. And those are the incidents that we've brought up. Our materiality level is 2.5 million rand that we use in water primitives for purposes of these incidents in the 14th and 8th. And the materiality is of this concern, I think, is 2.6 million rand that we look at. So these are small in terms of those, but it's quite important to make sure that we find these incidents, we investigate them, and that we do persecute or dismiss or discipline the people involved, and improve our system as well, because we wouldn't like to have the system to have.
No. What I want to suggest is that to bring for him for 10 minutes, exactly 10 minutes. See, he's right here behind him. And then we'll come back and then we'll take it to him. And then see how we can go forward. Okay, go to you, Father, who will be the chief of the number. We went for our break. I have Chris Mongos and Manny.
Thank you very much, Chapter Chairman. Mine are fairly, I'm having about two questions. The first one is, I'm trying to grapple with the idea of selling this profitable industry. I think we need to rethink about shutting down the software. I don't know who, but I think we need to rethink about it. Because, this is a profitable industry. There are entities here that we have that are losing a lot of
trust in
what we want. So I think those are the entities that are supposed to be shut down, not this one. This one, instead, we can employ a lot of our people who are unemployed. I think the idea of shutting down this entity to which are not holders. So. And then the second point, chapter 7, will be the question of the report itself here. As to what are the targets for subcos in respect to people with disabilities over the past year, and what are the challenges that have been identified in recent years? I think that means in different. Okay, there was another one also on the HIV and AIDS. I'm interested to know as to whether this pandemic actually is it not adversely affecting the workforce in South Africa. Thank you very much.
Just to, on the first, on your first question also, even though I understand that the selling of subcon, the reasons for that were, that was a political and a cabinet decision. They might share it with us because obviously they would have been told that this is why he's selling more than just that. But still, I don't want us to really trouble them with wanting to address to those questions. Maybe the other question would like us, what would have been their view on the issue? Not necessarily to tell us what they were told, but the people who are there in South Korea. Do they think it was the best decision to sell out KLS? But also it brings back that, I mean, linked to your question, it brings back a question that says, the three packages that were sold, maybe you were not there, I know, but surely you have had the opportunity to understand why they were sold. Was it because they were making a loss or was because a political decision was taken period. Just that, not any further detail. I'm just adding to the discussion that we have. Is that the moment because we'll take the two remaining hands and then hand over to you to answer. Bongos?
The difficult chance that they were talking to the open music hall. I'm just thinking whether this is what must we do next year. Whether we need to waste their time to come here. You know, as a portfolio community, because really it's a very awkward situation to deal with. But look, Chair, I'm sure the first question I wanted to ask you have covered this in terms of the gap around the particular matter. I wanted to discuss. But repeatedly, there's indicating, even in the report, the presentation that there are tight timelines. Understanding when, I'm sure you said, that's around March or so, then you should have sent you this issue and so on. But from the practical point of view, looking at the three issues which you have highlighted there, I know the one of the situations because anyway, I believe I've met already the people who are there, who are taking you to court. My comrades around the state of law. Now, looking into that, is that realistic? Are you going to be able to meet that particular target? I'm not encouraging that to be met, understand, but I'm just saying from the point of view that the shareholder said that it must be possible to do that. Because it would seem for me from the meeting I had, you have to embrace yourself for a big court now taking to that part. And if you are not going to be able to meet that particular deadline, what are the plans in place to ensure, because initially you said part of the plan that you are making is to ensure that you keep the business running for at the time when you need to be able to the last question says that is there any indication for when you have passed off after the month? I'm saying there's 10 of time then. After you wind up then do you have any time plan for yourself? In fact, I've never seen people are working hard to keep themselves out of trouble. But in this year, they are doing well to ensure that you become unemployed. Thanks,
Chairperson.
Chairperson, yes, maybe just to add on what the colleague said here, is that they're going to KLS is an operating unit of Sanford, and by March 2009 it should be out, and Sanford will then only having some of the assets.
set for yourself, so I understand it correctly. What will then happen? Will it mean that you will shut down, sell all those assets as well, over and above KLM, and then Chapcore will just disappear? As an ATM is gone. And the second question on page 10, just for clarity there, when you mention on the top draft number 20, you said that the budgeted profit, that is the profit that you expected for 2008, is 234 million. Excluding the plantation valuation adjustment. Am I correct? Then you said the impact of fires. Is that already been taken into account? Because if you take the 205 and 302 million of the impact of fires into consideration and you compare with the budgeted profit, then there will be a loss, not a profit. Okay, I just want to get clarity on that.
Fires.
Over to you.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I think the question relating to our view to the board about whether Subcall should be privatized or not, I think, as you rightly said, we don't have a mandate to go back to that decision. It's a decision that we need to take. But I think we need to be asking a bigger question as citizens of South Africa, as the portfolio committee, also as citizens of South Africa, and ask the question, up to now, all the empowerment transactions that have happened have not really fundamentally touched our people. And then we have to ask ourselves the second question, which sector is likely to touch our people quite fundamentally?
Chips, there's no point of order. I just want to mention that it's not unanimously that we are against the privatization. There are members like me and myself who support the privatization, and I want to congratulate Cabinet on this. not only influencers. There are some people that think they are.
Point of order, Chair Person, the question is being issued in right by the members, and then the question is being answered.
Okay, so the second point I was making is that which sectors are likely to fundamentally change the quality of life of our people? It is our thinking is that forestry is obviously one of them, because it deals with the ordinary people. And I think the problem doesn't lie necessarily in whether we're selling support or not. I think the fundamental problem lies in the way that we view rural communities. And our view, unfortunately, as a country, as far as rural communities are concerned, is that we still see our people as poor people, when in fact they are rich because they've got land. Mm. And because they haven't been given options about how to use that land, and they haven't been, there hasn't been in South Africa a process that gives real value to the land in rural areas, then we see our people as poor. But in fact, they are quite rich people. So I think we need a fundamental rethink in the way that we look at rural communities, particularly where the land use on the land is being used for crops that obviously could improve the quality of life of our people. So I don't think this is not a board view, but my personal view. I don't think that the challenge that we have in South Africa is a self-called challenge. I think our challenge is a vision challenge, where our vision is not geared to really look at policies that are going to unlock the value of what our people have in rural areas and give that value so that they can come to the table and negotiate. Let's just think about the people that have land claim, for instance. And on that land claim is forestry. Those people are sitting with billions and billions of rands that was never given to them. That's the reality. And so the question we should be asking ourselves, as leaders in whatever environment that we're leading, what are we really doing to unlock the value of land for our people? I think that's the fundamental question. It's beyond self-call in my view, and in fact it's beyond our particular department. I think it's a much broader question that the South Africans should be asking going forward. How do we unlock that environment for our communities on the ground? But having said that, one of the key things that we are concerned about as a board is the degree to which
in the current context, following the order of our shareholder in privatizing KLS, how can we put together a transaction that maximizes benefits for the community? And that is what we are looking at. It's very, very difficult. But I think we are quite hopeful that we're going to come up with a transaction that is going to be beneficial not just to the future expansion, in fact, of KLS, but also to the communities that are surrounding the KLS. So that would be our take on the solution.
Thanks,
Jessica. Yes.
Could I just add something to that? External. Okay. Although we're focusing on forestry, in South Africa there hasn't been a tremendous focus on agroforestry. And there are a whole range of industries that are suitable for empowerment that can be developed around forests that have not yet been developed around forests. And they range from the production of honey and charcoal to porcini mushroom collection, right through to ecotourism, right through to the development of estates around the land adjacent to forests and so on. So it's a very powerful this is a very, very powerful sector in the rural economy. And I think in the years of SAPCO and the years of KLS, the focus has been on the development of forest as an industry rather than agroforestry industries and how these could be developed as well. So there is massive potential. As our chairperson said, and it relates back to the issues of social responsibility in that, we are trying to put in place as much as possible of this before the transaction is completed. So the process of transformation continues with the design of the transaction. So we are trying to have as much benefit in terms of communities, as much benefit to the rural economy as is possible. And that is how we have interpreted our brief. So when we first came onto the board, the privatization of KLS was not on the agenda. And we were asked to come onto the board to look at broader issues of transformation. We have taken that first brief and tried to define it into the second brief, which is to sell KLS and wind down SAPCO as going concerns. So we are very conscious of that. And the time frames are very tight. And this, despite the one gentleman's concern about attendance of board meetings, this is very, very quickly turning into a full-time job. The attendance of board meetings is just a tip of the work that goes into trying to get this where it should be. Thank you.
Okay, just have to follow up on the privatization side. If you miss the deadline, or if the deadline is not realistic to be met, the company will be maintained in such a way that it can continue operations. So there's no issue that if the deadline is not met for privatization, that we don't have investment. So it's just the board looking after that as a going concern. Winding up of SAPCO, there's not, except for cash, there's only smaller assets within SAPCO, and the major one is the so-called Shannon Foundation at Barberton with a long-term lease for modeling. And there's a land claim on it, and the land claim commissioner has put the offer on the table, which the board mandates the management to proceed with discussions with the land claim commissioner. Sell it, So at the end, the expectation is that the winding up of Sasol or the phasing out of the operations within Sasol will take place simultaneously with the demand and privatization process. Can I ask Leslie to respond to the target on disability and what you're doing with regards to that?
In terms of the target for disability, I was really thinking, I think it's fair to mention that we're very, very low on the recruitment of physically challenged people, if I can put it that way. And this, the previous year, we managed to re-look at where best can we maximize appointments thereof, because the bulk of our workforce relies on the forestry area and the sawmilling or processing area, where it's usually very difficult to really get a person working on this area. The most suitable area is more administration sort of, and in the previous financial year, we managed to get one person, and we rearranged our working areas and ablutions and so forth to be able to accommodate them. If you look at it, the area which got really operational stuff is commerce and forest. The Sasol side usually has sort of options thereof in terms of either growing or keeping anything in place, but the bottom line is still very low, and the biggest challenge for us is that the bulk of the employees is from the forest and processing, and we're now focusing on administration, and we've already started of a change in the facility to suit the different changes.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you.
Any other questions?
In terms of the production backup mostly, that's where we've got a little bit of challenge there, but it's not really impacting currently as we speak on the productivity thereof. We do provide energy food as well for certain people, and those who are clean and the found, we do assist them as well. The productivity, and we have not calculated the percentage in terms of how much percentage of workforce has been affected thereof, but those who are clean and been found to have certain diseases that are less could lead to HIV and AIDS, so forth, we provide them energy.
Did you respond to the question before the question?
Before
you come in. We're trying to respond later.
We said that it's part of the
Then the last one, did you make reference to the tripartite discussions? I know you've just been there now, but they were saying between 2001 and 2005. Well, is it because they were making the loss? I know you didn't have that. You didn't have that part.
No, I wasn't there with
it. Or was it part of the exit strategy?
It was part of the overall strategy of government to start the information policy, which was part of that strategy.
I have your hand, man, and then...
No, it's still going to answer for the question about topic.
Oh, alright. So
on the impact of fires, the two amounts there.
The feedback.
Yeah, doesn't the first is slide 20, where we say that the budget of profit for 2008 is 24 million. The impact of the price is 2,500 to 2,700 additional operating expenditure and 302 million on the plantation valuation. The plantation valuation, what I've tried to do is the 300 million is comparable with the 1.9 million that was reported at the end of March. If we look at the plantation valuation for the year ending March 2008, we again have selling price increases and cost price increases, and there are volume impacts. Our initial estimates are that the 350 million as of the end of March 2007 will be reduced significantly by the positive impact of the selling price increase. And so you think it will reduce to approximately 50 or 50 million negative impact. So that's a big chunk that will be out of the way. But the actual cash flow expenditure of 205 to 223, what we're trying to do there is not to take the hit in 1 year, but to spread it over 2 years, so that we can at least maintain a positive bottom line before the translation variations.
So in other words, Chairperson of your commission, through you, the budget of 234 million will still be
reduced. No, it will be reduced by at least 100 million.
By at least 100
million. We are in the process of re-looking at our budget and feeding this information into the budget, and we will then come up with an updated plan for the year to end, which we will feed into our reporting team in the year. No, thank you very much, Jefferson. It was a follow-up on the, you know, I was expecting a response on the HIV campaign of a program, you know, and AIDS awareness kind of a program. I wanted to hear something. I think they do have it in place or in senior report. In senior report, in the law report. I will draw that if they have that program.
No, you did touch it. I can't remember where, but I know that there is a relationship between SAPCOL and IFLOMA. What is the future of that relationship if when SAPCOL winds up? What does it mean?
The relationship, Kumasi and Forest owns 80% of the flow market overseas, and the decision was that we will isolate that from the privatization process, and that our shareholder minister Irwin specifically addressed that with the counterparts in Mozambique. So at this stage it's not a focus of the capital that we're taking the lead from our shareholder.
Okay.
Yes, Chairperson, my apologies. I need to leave for another appointment. But could I just add that our committee officially writes to the committee section. An experience is that the way this committee has been shoved around, I think we've been about 10 different venues in the last 2 months. I will send the text to the answer of the letter. But this will inform the part of the minister's meeting. If the committee agrees, definitely.
We'll get a copy to the minister's school year as well.
You have 4 hours.
You will appreciate it.
I'm sure there's no objection to that.
I don't suppose I'm looking for the next meeting. Well, thank you.
Thanks.
You can go with that one.
The social economic development, the social economic program that we have. I always have this worry when I listen to these good things that are happening, and I always ask myself, where are these children? So that when I come from Mpumalanga and go to school in Mpumalanga, Kotwal one day is able to go and visit this particular school that was built by SAPCOL. Mm-hmm. Just to have an idea where they, because sometimes we speak of these big figures that are towards social upliftment, but in essence we don't get to see them physically, you know. So it would be nice really to have an idea as to, maybe it's in one of the documents, I don't know, maybe somewhere here, but at least it will give us a sense as to where these places are. It's just like your broad-based economic empowerment figures. Sometimes you speak of beyond, but when you sit and look back, maybe it's the extent of the poverty of our communities. I don't see this impact in terms of it changing the lives of our people. But put together these billions from the over, how many departments do we have? Over 20.
Mm-hmm.
more than 20 departments, and in each one of them there is always a big, broad-based black economic empowerment, money, billions, but they don't translate into real change in the communities of where we come from. So I was just wanting to raise that. It's not a question of that, but it would be nice because I see that this document is quite detailed, and unfortunately it's the only document I did not really look at that much. But it's fine.
And on page 34 we did include everything from what we have been talking about. This is the document I'm talking about,
now the schools are only where your forests are.
Yeah.
It's not
great.
Not stay.
From before, you'll see bridging programs, stage impact, you'll see computer centers at Mujahid community, and the Ron Donald, Mujahid Vale. If you look at going down, it's a big school. And then school buildings, it's more class in Mombe area, close to Hunaka, and Abeya Shibahau Primary School, and Shiheli, and
Okay, I'll give money then.
Thank you. Actually, it's not a question, it's a remark. You know the debate on SOE, privatization, but it's also taking into consideration that with privatization, not to say that things will go backwards, it might go forward. If you privatize, you will heading for more profits, and you, if you sell it to an existing company or a new company, they need still employees, and in many a case they just take up the existing employees. There might be little changes in the executive and management, but the other employees just getting on, you know, it's just a change of the employer who's going to pay them. So you must use in that way as well. There are some benefits in privatization as well, because you know, sometimes we just think it's a loss for government. It's not loss for the country. It's also an asset for the owners of that. You must protect me. And I hope that in the absence of this one in 2009, the minister won't think of another SOE to fill that gap. We must decline the SOE. They saw everything in front of those three places.
Okay.
Thank you very much. I think I like what they are doing. I like their approach. They have CS5 for that. Actually, I want to make a question. Actually, in my constituency.
Not in the
future.
You can't lobby them here. You are only supposed to ask questions on the future. Okay?
Yeah. No, okay. those projects happen. I don't know the areas, but I don't see my area.
In the forest, in your area.
Yes, every year, something similar to them, giving scholars and all that. So my request actually was some assistance. In my constituency, we have covered all the other areas except Baba
Chowdhury.
For this project.
Okay. Now you can imagine as a person whose area is near a forest and you say nothing, you know, how much more about an area, both in terms of distance, let alone just need no forest.
You know, Chair, we see that you look up. From Pumara. I need to tell what he creates. Because in my condition, late in that time, in my condition. Now, given what you've seen there, and given our Simon, I said, oh, but he does not go there. But I think the honorable member is correct. Unfortunately, we are talking to an ongoing contract. It's a bumping up, so I don't think they must be able to work out. But check, on a serious note, you can check. Maybe what you must do, check, at one point, you can say, you see the issues raised by the chairperson of the board, I think they are clear. Parliament were independent from the executive. They were not obliged to follow the orders of the executive. We can do whatever we can to influence the decision of the executive to another direction. Maybe at one point after the report, I think that we'll be discussing of the report. Maybe that was a big subject, you know, some of these things to debate in the house. So that we start putting these things, because the issues range around the impact of the transaction. You see, like this RCT housing, where a guy with some few thousand net and 10 times to and then after that, 2 years or 1 year down the line, he's more bankrupt, owing stuff and other things, because he didn't work. The net of the transaction, I think you still raise a very good comment. I understand my honorable member is in favor of the private commission, so I understand my sense. Where do I stand around the issue of public television and other things as well? But I'm saying, hey, we need to take note of what you're doing. And maybe we'll be finalized with the phone that we come up with some other way of trying to engage. We should not accept it as a matter of fact as my
colleague.
Which I respect. You see, we're not fighting our own country, but we're not fighting anyone. We want to influence the decision of cabinet. We directly do something with beneficial to the majority of our people. You must remember, Chair, that this poor people there for no one else. Cabinet can take decisions. And cabinet are not represent the people. Their only hope and aspiration is with the legislature. It's hard to represent those people, no one else. If you don't take up their issues, no one else will. Of course, it's in their rights. And not to do so and so on. Thank you.
The last question. You made reference when you were speaking about the board, saying that there is this big transaction coming, but you alluded to something like currently you don't have a board member that has financial expertise. What do you intend doing about this? What are the implications of that for the board? Or did I get it right?
Very short. It also links to this. Part of the negotiations, of course, can also be that some of the employees or employees being carried on, you know, still be employed. I mean, it's a real deal negotiation process. I'm glad I'm not in your chair because it's a difficult process. But, you know, to accommodate those people, and I'm very much concerned about that as well. Privatization is not to get other people to damage you. It's to make more profit, relieve the taxpayer, but not to give damage to the employees and the production, the economy and stuff like that. So I assume you will take that into account while negotiating the selling process to maintain the due point of yours and move everything that we see there as, you know, part of the agreement of the person to win. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, so remember, man, they made reference to what the reasons when they said one of the terms of reference or whatever words you might choose or guidelines would be to take care, whoever takes over will have to be obliged, even asked to take over the employee's work. But obviously, whenever they spread the position, is always a job loss. We'll see it with support if it doesn't happen. It will be a nice experience. But the experience thus far, jobs are lost when they start. But you're not there now.
just to respond on the questions that you have raised about the financial capacity of the board, we have raised the matter with the minister. I think he's very much aware, and he is actually appointing somebody. He has made, he has told us that he'll be appointing somebody. But I think the committee should be assured that as a board, we have a right to appoint any expertise that we need. Obviously, we will do that in consultation with the shareholders. But at this point in time, we are not feeling that it's a big challenge. It's just a gap, but we don't think it's a huge challenge. Thank you. All right. Are there any other issues here that came up? But I don't know what it's about to do. Any other questions? Okay. Then. If there are no further questions, let me then take this opportunity to thank the delegation from Strasbourg and the leadership of the Chapters of Mongolia. And all the best in your termination of your job. And all the best in what you do. We don't want to go back to the political questions. And we have the minister to engage in other issues that we indicated to you. But all the same, thank you very much. Till we see each other again. Peter made reference to something like we should visit Subcall before you close shop. That we might consider. Maybe we see you on the ground.
Yeah, we can plant the trees there as well then.
Yeah. And so I want to imagine, can I have 2 minutes of the members of the committee? We have correspondence here. Thank you very much. Of November, a day after we arrive. Please, this is very lovely. Please build a school man in Chris's community.
We can fly back, but take a late flight. So we want to know who is available
for the visit to Atlantis on the 23rd, so that if you agree, then the committee section can start processing of organizing. FCOM, Atlantis, whatever. Okay, Mani is, Chris is, Kotwan, Bongo, 1, 2, 3, Peter is available, 4, Rob is available, I'm available. So it means the majority of members will be available. But then regarding the program, my understanding, which copy is that?
I don't know, but if you can just get it on Friday, just a new thing for Friday, because
you'll make it ready.
Friday, one for the rest of the
year. Yeah. Like then the last thing is
very early copy.
The other two things, the Committee on Public Accounts, right, is having a meeting on Wednesday. Oh, then we are busy on Wednesday next week. So it's out for us at 9. They are hearing evidence from the accounting officers of the same thing. So it would have been nice to be there. But because
you can just give us on Friday. It's like this.
We can give you a clinical.
What happened on this?